This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Talking to Death is released weekly, every Wednesday, and brought to you absolutely free. But if you want ad-free listening and exclusive bonuses, subscribe to Tenderfoot Plus at tenderfootplus.com or on Apple Podcasts.
Talking to Death is a production of Tenderfoot TV and iHeart Podcasts. Listener discretion is advised.
Talking to Death, we're back. I'm actually in New York City right now. And so is Michael.
Tribeca.
Michael. I usually call him Mike. Michael.
Yeah, that's weird.
Michael's what I say when I'm in business mode. Well, we're here in, strangely, the same exact hotel room I stayed in last time. And we were here about a month or two ago doing some interviews for Talking to Death, some that you've seen, some you haven't seen yet. But I guess there's just a... I mean, there's probably 900 rooms in this hotel, and I swear to God, I just reserved a standard room, and here we are back in the same precise place that we were recording this first round of interviews in. So it's going to look like optically down the road that this is just our New York studio. So I'm just gonna roll with it.
Yeah,
it is at this point.
Tenderfoot, New York.
Tenderfoot Studios in New York City. We're also out here getting some really fun interviews of some people that I've looked up to forever. I don't want to spoil too much, but just some fun, exciting people that I got a chance to sit down with and pick their brains and learn how they tick and kind of see our similarities and differences. And I think that all you guys will get not only just a kick out of it, but maybe learn something too in the process. Today's guest is one of my very good friends. I have known this person for over a decade, and I met him back in, this was probably 2008. I was a young little sprout, and I wanted to be a musical artist. I wanted to be a rapper, singer, and clearly that did not work out entirely. That's why I'm here making podcasts, but I had a fun time doing it, and I met this producer named Matthew Pearson, also RIP, one of my best friends, but he passed away sadly a couple years ago, but he lives on forever and impacted so many people, not only just in my life, but the music industry in Atlanta, the rap scene, style, culture. But I met this person through my good friend Maddie, who is a producer. And the first time I ever actually set eyes on this guy, I walked in the room and he was at a point in his life where he was also rapping and singing. His name is Greg Mike. This guy makes some of the coolest art out there. Big, huge murals, fun, vibrant colors. He has this mascot called Larry Loudmouth. The guy is just a brilliant human who has mastered his art as a craft. Greg Mike's art is bold, it's playful, it's colorful. It just makes you feel good when you look at it. And he has this very popular character, mascot, whatever you want to call it, called Larry Loudmouth. And it's really kind of an iconic figure. And if you're an Atlantan, if you live in Atlanta, there's no way you've not come across this either in a mural somewhere in East Atlanta or on a billboard or somewhere inside a Falcons game, a Braves game, whatever, a Hawks game, you name it. This guy is on the pulse of the city, and he's also, over the years in his career, built this big, huge community of other artists and features them in his gallery. He's just an amazing human who is way better at something than I'm trash at. Mike, how good are you at drawing?
I'm absolutely terrible. Like, I can kind of doodle, but like, I'm bad at straight lines and like anything perfect looking.
So you'd be a bad surgeon?
Yeah, probably. But
you don't
thing
have the surgery
is,
hands, you know, like the
yeah,
steady.
Yeah, no,
you know?
My hands shake real bad. It's like a genetic thing in my family.
But you just haven't had a drink yet, or what?
Yeah, exactly.
It's weird. It's like I have to like just drink this shot of whiskey in the morning, and then it goes away.
It goes away. No, but Greg Mike is the guy who does those perfect surgical lines. Like his stuff is just known for being like it's printed. It's amazing.
It's just fun to look at, and I actually have one of his pieces in my house, the infamous Larry Loudmouth, just an iconic staple of Atlanta. But I wanted to catch up with Greg because, one, it's been a minute since we've just sat down and talked as friends, but he's become so successful in the artist world, the graffiti world, and I've always just been so curious of like, what that is like. I'm talking about the OG guys who, in the middle of the night, with hoodies on, dodging the cops, out there tagging up places. You wake up and you're driving down I-20 and you see some tag on the road sign. Like, how did that get there?
These people are like rock climbing to get out. You see it right out this window. There's graffiti at the top of this brick building. And I'm like, who is hanging off the side of this building doing this right now?
It's seriously, it's mind blowing. But it just sounds like a fun life. Just running from the cops, all to just leave your mark somewhere and tag up a town. It's kind of badass. But this guy is a genius. He has so much stuff going on. I think we have a very hilarious conversation. And I learned a lot about his journey to get to where he is today that I honestly didn't even know. And I think a lot of this stuff is relatable and applicable to everyone, no matter what you're doing in life or what you want to do. I learned a lot, but either way, I'm super excited for everyone to meet my good friend, Greg Mike. And so without further ado, the next episode of Talking to Death, Greg Mike. Hope you enjoy it. Well, it's good to see you again, man. It's been a minute.
Good to see you as well. Long time.
Long time. I've actually known you for a long time.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. What year do you think that was that we first met?
2011? 12?
Sounds about
or
right.
Or earlier, maybe, actually.
Sounds about
Whenever
right.
Whenever I met you, were doing music. Or that's what or at least that's what it looked like you were doing.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've always been a huge fan of music. I've always said that, you know, music is my speed. You know, whether you can take that as like a drug reference or a reference for how I operate on the day to day. You know, it's like I feel like from the minute I get up, it's always like putting on music, and whether that's a fast EDM song, that kind of dictates the mood and energy that I work at. Right. And like same thing if it's like on some chill, mellow, you know, reggae vibes, like that's just the vibe that I'm going with at the time. I feel like music always dictates that.
Oh, yeah.
Especially with art. I mean, I find it's almost impossible to like create without music playing. So like it feels so weird.
When you're painting and stuff, you just always have the music on?
Oh, I have to.
Yeah,
it just feels like so stale. Like if I go in the studio and I don't put on a track, I'm like, it's like dead silence, you know? So it's like rhythmic, you know? But yeah, I mean, we used to, you were crushing it back then. I was just messing around with some buddies. I feel like at the time it was like, go to the studio and paint and then go to the music studio and, you know, rip some bars.
I'm trying to remember this. There's like a song that you were doing that's still in my head sometimes.
The diamond song. She shines like diamonds. I think we're going to have to find that. But
yeah,
I actually looked years ago and I couldn't find it. Okay. I mean, because it was on like MySpace or something. Like,
oh, man.
And that all those files must have just been deleted.
I said we bring back MySpace. Like, we don't need more social media. I know that they've talked about it, but yeah. I kind of want the top 8 friends again.
Yeah, that was fresh. And the song, you know, you had that song.
Right.
I remember I had Kid
this
Cudi.
This is my vibe right now.
Yeah, Day and Night. That was like mine for like, you know, at least 6 months.
You and about 100,000 other people.
But Justin Timberlake tried to bring it back, I think, at one point. He was an investor.
That's right. That was a while ago.
I could be wrong. I mean, I just heard that. But
where's Tom? You know?
Tom's on an island somewhere. I saw he's something rich, recently. He didn't care. Yeah, he's just chilling. He seems like he made out better than everyone.
Yeah, he just know? Said, peace.
You like, have fun with that social media. Yeah, I'm going to be over here in Hawaii just chilling.
I feel like, you know, if you're a professional artist, you make artwork, and it's I mean, there's a lot of it here in my office. Huge fan of yours. I feel like that's one of the harder things to do, is be self-sustainable doing your job. Like, how long did it take you to get to a point where you can do this for a living? Because, I mean, you could be a talented artist. You probably know tons of them, but do they, you know, make a living off of this?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me it was really, I mean, I've been doing art, you know, since I was a little kid. Like, I've always picked up, you know, crayons when I was a child, and my parents would put out a giant sheet and let me just draw on papers all over the ground. So, I mean, I was always attracted to it. So, but I don't think from a professional standpoint, like you're saying, where I was able to sustain myself on it was probably till 2009. So, I mean, there was, you know, and I was born in 82 and probably did art, you know, got serious about my art when I was about maybe 10 or 12 years old. Mm-hmm. So I think from like 10 till when I was 26, maybe 15 or so years of like actually like painting daily, you know, going to art school. Like, I mean, I was a starving artist at that point. I never, you know, could imagine like being where it's at now and being able to be a full-time professional artist. Like, if you would have asked me back then, you know, because there were so many times of like people telling me, you can't do this. You know, you're not going to make it. You need to get a real job.
Right.
Like, even family, friends.
You said, did your parents say that kind
of
stuff?
No, my parents never said that, but it was always like, you know, it was always like the brother's girlfriend or like the people that were like, you know.
You're going to have to get a real job one day.
Yeah, exactly. So things like that where it was like, I think that type of stuff too just like lit that like underdog fire and fuel for my tank. Like,
in what way though?
Just all the people telling you you can't do something.
To prove them wrong or what?
Yeah. I mean, I still feel like I used that like kind of aggression.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was younger, all my art was like super dark and kind of disturbing because I was like, you know, pissed off young graffiti vandal. And
punk rock?
Yeah. And just like skateboarding, punk, you know, vandalism, just, you know, all about just, you know, anarchy and whatnot. But then I switched it to being more positive, and I feel like, because I feel like that just made my mood better. But I mean, just... Yeah, never thought ever like, yeah, you can make money off art. I think it was just one of those things. And I'm sure even with you, it's like, you know, it just happens. And then it's like a snowball effect and it keeps going. And you're like,
yeah,
okay, you start to see it grow and you're like, wait, okay, there might be something here. And it's like, if you don't chase that, you never know. Or if you don't try out a million things, I mean, you know, you're never going to know. It's one thing I tell my kids. I'm like, try every single sport. You know, you might be the world's best badminton player.
Right.
But if you never pick that up and try it, like, you're never going to
might
know.
Not, but yeah. You could be.
Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like,
no, I feel
that's
you.
What's crazy about life. And it's like, you know.
Just like taking shots, you mean?
Yeah, because you don't know what your talent is until you do it, right? I mean, there's certain things that you're drawn to naturally, but it's like, you know.
So from 10 to 26, I mean, you're saying that you're like you were a starving artist. Had you decided at that point that even if you can't make – like get rich off this or whatever it is, that you were just going to do it anyways? That you, this was,
yeah,
more valuable
to you? Was doing it. Like, I was working, you know, normal 9-to-5 jobs. I mean, I used to be a bag boy at Publix. I've worked at every single restaurant, like, yeah, in South Florida growing up there. But I was always, the one thing I was always doing was doing art on the side. It's like I'd get off of work and then I'd go and do graffiti till, you know, 3-4 in the morning. Mm-hmm. Even when I moved to Atlanta, same thing. Like I was working like, you know, just like consulting and design, graphic design jobs. But like I'd come home at, you know, 6 o'clock and I'd start painting and I'd paint till 3 in the morning. And then I'd get up again and at 7 o'clock and I'd repeat it. So I think if it's in you, it's in you. It's like, I mean, it's one of those things you can't force, right? It's like, mm-hmm, you got to let it out as an artist. You have to release that. Otherwise, it's not healthy to just keep all that energy like bottled up. And I think with anything, if you stick with it long enough, you're going to see success and, you know, you're going to see growth. And I think that's, at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. Whether it's from, I mean, if it's satisfying you creatively, whether it makes money or not, then that means it's the right thing for you to do, I think.
All the people who, you know, would say that you should get a real job, that kind of thing, you know, that probably, like you were saying, motivated you back in the day What motivates you today? I mean, how do you stay hungry like that at this point? Like that little drop there?
Yeah,
like I just realized I kind of just slipped out.
I think that's the toughest part about kind of the stage that I'm at now, because you know, a lot of things that I've dreamed of have came to fruition, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, when you're younger, you have all these dreams. X, I want to be here. I want to do this, X, Y, Z. And then as those things come to happen, you kind of have to reset those goals. Mm-hmm. And, it's like, what are those things and how do you reset those and how do you stay creative and how do you stay motivated? I mean, for me, a lot of it is like, I have to get out of my own space. I got to get out of my own city. I got to get out of my own like work environment, whether that's like taking a flight and going to a place I've never been to, because I always say that like when you look at things in another city or outside of your normal 9-to-5 day to day, you kind of look at things from a different lens, right? Like, have you ever noticed like when you're traveling, how much more alert you are because you've never been in that space. So you're looking and you're analyzing things from a different viewpoint, vantage point. You're like, I mean, I know when I drive around these streets here, I kind of go into autopilot mode in my head because you know where you're going.
You almost do it blindly, right?
Yeah. And it's like, I feel like that happens the same way with your like everyday work. I know for me, from like a creative standpoint, it's like, mm-hmm. if I'm doing the same monotonous thing every day, my brain isn't going to look at things differently and think of things differently. So it's like when I take myself and I go to another city, it kind of makes me look at things completely differently.
Yeah.
And that's where like I'm seeing inspiration. So yeah, I mean, it's like doing a lot of that travel, getting in nature, and then finding out like really like what matters in life. Like, it's not.
Have you figured that out yet?
Yeah, I mean, as now that I have a kid, you know, two kids, a wife, and you know, a lot of things I dreamed of as a kid just through success, it's like, you know, you kind of just have to like really think about what matters in life, you know. It's like, so that's kind of where I'm at now, and trying to figure out, you know, like what are the next moves and how I'm gonna get there. And you know, I have some exciting things with building like this new creative hub. And
tell me about that. What's the plan?
So this has been kind of like a 10-year decade dream for me, is to build like kind of like a just a creative hub that encompasses all things that we do. Because, you know, what I have currently is, you know, there's the Greg Mike Art, which is my personal art brand. There's ABV, which is my gallery, which we work with close to 500 artists globally. And then we have my ABV agency, which is all corporate commercial, you know, collaboration projects. So with that, there's just like so many crazy things that go on during the normal everyday, whether that's me painting the studio or creative directing projects or curating art shows. But I always wanted to have like one place where we could do this all in one space, right? Where I could kind of hop from room to room, work with my team, you know, create shows, paint in my studio, all under one roof. So about 4 years ago, I found a space in East Atlanta Village. It's a church that was built in 1950s. And I was able to purchase the building, and we're renovating the whole space, but it's gonna be really just like a creative fantasy factory hub, where we'll be able to do all this stuff. You know, it's 4,000 square feet of gallery space, design studio, conference rooms, art storage, my personal painting studio, just rooms for anything imaginable. You walk in the building and just like anything you can think of, you can do in that space, whether it's giant 20-foot tall sculptures or massive murals on the outside of the building, just taking everything and putting it in one place. So I'm just excited, like it's things like that, like excited to see kind of what comes out of that, you know, like if you have a space where you can do everything in one place, you know, what kind of work is going to be developed. So
are you on the hunt for a new home this spring but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Tired of restless nights? Meet Lisa, the sleep expert. Here at Lisa, we know that good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. That's why their mattresses are made for exceptional comfort and support, catering to every sleep need. Check out Lisa's Sapira Hybrid Mattress, named Best Hybrid Mattress 5 years running. Sleep hot? The Chill Collection is built with cool-to-the-touch top fabric and layers of high-density comfort foams, all intended to remove excess body heat while maximizing comfort. With Lisa, getting a new mattress has never been easier. Delivery is free, and you have 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. Don't spend another night dreaming of better sleep. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to lisa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. That's LEESA.com/iHeart. Exclusions apply. See lisa.com for more details.
Who owns pieces of your artwork that you're the most humbled by? That you're like, oh man, it's pretty cool that they are a fan of my stuff.
I don't know, man. That's a tough question.
Which one flattered you the most or something, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's been a few along the way, and it's cool when it just shows up, you know, whether it's like an artist like Diplo and he's doing a live stream and he's got, you know, my vinyl figure in the background and,
right,
you know, things like that, or like, you know, the random DM from like Justin Bieber that's like, hey, I want you to do my charity art auction or something like that. Uh-huh. And that's what's cool. It's like, you know, the power of the internet now, right? It's like you never know, you know, like what's going to happen tomorrow, right? You might open your phone and there's a DM from, you know, one of your biggest, you know, superstars you looked up to as a kid,
right,
asking to collaborate on a project. And those things are cool when they happen. And it's like, you know, it's been a lot of that over the years where it's, you know, I think stars align for a reason. It's like you got to put in that work and, you know, work on your art over time, and good things will kind of come to life, right?
I feel like when you're a starving artist, you're largely uncomfortable for a majority of the time. And as you gain success, with that oftentimes comes more comfortability. And so once you get to that level, do you feel like you ever try to make yourself uncomfortable again?
I actually kind of feel like it's the opposite of that. The more success you have, the more money and financial, you know, success you have, the more responsibility you have, the more employees you have. I mean, you know, now I have close to, you know, 8 or 9 employees full time that are just, you know, working on projects that we're working on. And it's like, you have more responsibility and more fear, I feel like, to make sure that you're going to continue to, you know, always, you know, create work that's going to be successful and collected and whatnot. When you're young and you don't have any of that, you know, stress or burden or worry, you can create whatever you want.
Right.
You know, also when you create, you know, a body of work and over 15 years, you develop a style as an artist, as a new artist, you can do whatever you want. You could jump 15 styles, you know, every week, right?
Yeah.
Because you don't have a collector base.
There's no standard that you've set, right? Yeah.
So I think that's the most challenging thing for artists and creatives, or probably entrepreneurs or business people, you know, in general. It's like, you know, how do you make sure that you grow properly and you don't lose your initial fans, right? It's like, what if you're known to manufacture whatever type of product and you're like, oh, that's our, you know, bread and butter. We have to do that. But times change and styles change and people want something else. I mean, I feel like you see it all the time with even in tech, or, you know, these companies that are known for one thing and then they keep doing that and then somebody else comes along and progresses. So it's like one part, right? They're like, we have to do what we got to do to make sure we bring in the money to feed all the employees and, you know, pay all the bills, right? But then if you're not growing and changing, then people are going to get, you know, they're going to get the, I guess, just complacent with you and move on to something else.
So you think just building on what you've done is arguably harder than, I guess, even if you were dead broke back in the day, you had more freedom to kind of just do whatever and take risks that didn't have as much of an impact if you failed. But maybe the further you get down the line, the more successful you are, the more those risks matter to your well-being in the moment.
Yeah, 100%.
Or what you've built, right? Yeah.
I mean, think about like how many musicians, how hard it is for musicians to stay relevant and like
after number one hit or something, right?
Yeah. You know, like I feel like that's like the toughest thing for a musician is like you drop that, you know, that first album and then your follow-up album, there's so much stress where people are like, oh, you got to have the hits. You got to have the number one.
Sophomore slump, here it comes, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a scary feeling, but you don't ever consider those things when you're, you know, the starving artist mentality because they don't matter to you.
Yeah, yet. You don't know. You're not thinking about it. I think that's all just like, right? Comes along with the just years of doing it. You know?
Do you have any regrets in your life that stand out to you?
Any regrets? Not a ton of regrets. I mean, I think there's things that, like, I think it's more just like time. I wish I would have done things sooner and be more.
What do you mean?
Just time, like when I actually got serious about, you know, about art. Even though I started early, like I could have probably gotten, you know, more serious early, which could have sped up the entire process.
But what is getting serious about art? So there was a time that you're picturing where, okay, now I'm getting more serious, or what?
Yeah, I think it's just being more active, right? And being more like in the scene and don't be scared to knock down doors and don't be scared to make those calls or send those emails or show up and, you know, show face. It's like, I spent a lot of my, I guess, younger years just like with that fear of being told no, right? So it's like, and I think as you get older, obviously you get more confident, and as you have more wins, you're going to be, you know, more confident, but I think everybody starting off is scared of that feeling of, you know, just talking to people or like, you know, going up in a room where you don't know anybody and pitching your own work or, you know.
So you didn't want the rejection. So you kind of
maybe
consciously held yourself back like in hindsight sometimes.
Yeah, not even like, I think just as a young kid, I think that's just things that kids go through in general. Not even talking about my art, but like I remember you'd be scared to like pick up the phone and call somebody. Like your parents would be like, call Johnny's parents and ask them if you can go spend the night.
And you're like, hell no.
You know, I don't know. It's just like that type of stuff. And like, I see now looking back at where I'm at and I see some kids that are young that are like, you know, very timid and shy. And it's like, what's the worst thing that can happen to you if you go into a gallery and talk to the curator and ask them like, hey, take a look at my work. Right. Because you learn from all those experiences. It was just like, yeah, I think there's just years of that, like, just kind of fear.
So what did you learn through that? If you somehow overcame the fear of, you know, making that cold call or email.
I mean,
what did you learn through doing it?
What I'm learning now is just like time on this planet, there's not a lot of it, like, for us. And I'm sure, like, I mean, I don't know.
Mortality's becoming real.
When I hit 40, that's when shit got real. And I was like, holy shit. Like, you know, like.
What did it feel like?
I'm getting old.
I'm turning 36 next week.
Yeah, so well, I mean, when you're in your 30s, you're like, oh, I'm a 30-year-old. You know,
I'm still in my 30s,
time,
right?
You know? Like, I'm not 50. I'm not 60. You know, I don't know. When I hit 40, it was just like an eye opener. I was like, okay, holy shit. Like, what if, you know, what I would give to be 30, you know, again, you know. So it's like, I think it's a lot of like reflection like that. And, you know, it's like, all right, now how did the next 30 years look, right? 30, 40, 50 years, hopefully, God willing, right? So, I mean, and that just goes back to that comment, like, yeah, if I would have gotten, you know, started sooner and more serious sooner, where would I be right now? You know, like, would I be where I am now, like 10 years ago, I guess, right?
Yeah. So if you're afraid to go talk to that guy in the gallery, you know, what'd you learn by just saying, fuck it, I'm going to go do it anyways? Is it that nothing bad usually happened?
Yeah, I feel like you're always building it up so much worse in your head.
Like, no one really cares.
I would drive
much?
Myself crazy in my head being like, oh my God, I can't call this person, right? And then it's like, you get off the phone and you're like, I'm such an idiot. Like, why was I that? I thought about that for 6 days and like freaked out and couldn't sleep. And then I got off the phone and that was the easiest thing that ever happened.
It's just done. Yeah.
But I feel like a lot of people like deal with that, you know, it's like mental anxiety and stress of just like you build things up in your head.
Yeah.
And then when it's done, you're like, wow, that wasn't that bad.
Yeah. And like you realize that you're the only person who's really thinking about it like that.
Yeah.
But it feels real.
I think about that all the time. Like half the things that you stress about or you think other people are thinking about, like no one's thinking about that. Everyone's thinking about themselves most of the time, right?
Yeah, it's like, usually, yeah.
You're like, what if I do this? What are people going to think? But it's like, no, those people are not thinking.
We don't even care what you think, actually.
Or if they do, it's going to be 1 second and they're like, oh, okay, like, I'm going to pick my dog up at the bed. You're like, that was weird, but all right.
Yeah, no, but that anxiety feels like it's just the absolute truth, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, it could be polarizing and crushing to people. I mean, a lot of artists aren't people that like to talk to people. They're very like...
Are you one of those?
I mean, I kind of walk like a middle ground, I feel like, you know, because a lot of artists are not entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. you know, they're not, you know, they're not into business. They don't want to deal with invoicing and talking to, you know, lawyers and legal folks. And
right.
They want to be in the studio and they want to create. You know, I kind of feel like I walk like the middle ground where, you know, I have that entrepreneurial spirit and kind of got that drive. But I love art and I've always done art. But dude, there's so many artists, and you know, that's why agencies are great, like, because they can handle all that stuff. But there's so many artists where they either get frustrated, it starts messing with their art, the art looks different, or they just like can't emotionally or mentally like handle that stuff. It's just like they were built to create art and that's it. You know, it's like they go in the studio and they paint, that's it. And
yeah,
you know.
Do you still get scared when you unveil a new series?
For sure. 100%.
What's it feel like?
I mean, with art, it's always, you know, the thing about art is you're putting it out for people to critique it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Is that like, how you look at
it? You create something and you say, you look at the reaction and you're like, you know. I mean, obviously you create for yourself and you're getting your emotions out through the art. But at the end of the day, if you put your art in a gallery and invite people to come look at it, you know, that is a pretty terrifying thing if you think about it. You're like, all right, what do you think? You know?
It's all right.
Yeah, so, you know.
So, I mean, do you feel like it's that your art is an extension of yourself?
Yeah. I mean, for me, my art's always just been like a way for me to kind of release emotion. And, you know, that's why, like I said, like when I switched my art to kind of being more like happy, colorful, positive, you know, versus I was painting a lot of like depressed, weird shit when I was a young kid, you know.
As an outlet, or what?
Yeah, as an outlet. You know, originally it was an outlet, but then I started realizing that as I'm painting all this like negative, dark, depressing stuff, that it wasn't helping me. I was just staring at all the stuff, all the bad things.
Okay,
and it was like,
yeah.
Okay, like what if I try all the positive thoughts? I try to convey all the positive thoughts through my art, whether that's smiling characters or positive statements or, you know, and then that's when I noticed like it started making me feel better versus making me feel like depressed, right?
So it felt good to get it out, but then you were just living in this darker world all the time.
Yeah, exactly. Versus living in like a positive, like, you know, a positive, happy place. You're living in this like deep, dark, depressing, all the depressive thoughts. Where I always thought it was like, oh, you got to let your like dark thoughts out on canvas. And
right.
But it's actually like I learned over time. It was like the opposite. Like, what if you take all the positive things you're thinking and all the positive things that people tell you or, you know, or positive things people say and incorporate that in your work? What's that going to do to your overall, you know, well-being, right? And what's that going to do for other people? Like, there's people that tell me all the time, like, they'll see murals and they're like, you know, send DMs. They're like, yo, this brightens my day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I feel like that's like, you know, that's what you want. You want your art to kind of affect people to positively, right? And that could just be like the colors that I use or like, you know, my character, Larry Loudmouth, like the way that those characters are always smiling and giant grins and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's just like anything, you learn over time, right? And, you know, hopefully that continues to make people feel that way.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Tired of restless nights? Meet Leesa, the sleep expert. Here at Leesa, we know that good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. That's why their mattresses are made for exceptional comfort and support, catering to every sleep need. Check out Leesa's Sapira Hybrid Mattress, named Best Hybrid Mattress 5 years running. Sleep hot? The Chill Collection is built with cool-to-the-touch top fabric and layers of high-density comfort foams, all intended to remove excess body heat while maximizing comfort. With Leesa, getting a new mattress has never been easier. Delivery is free, and you have 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. Don't spend another night dreaming of better sleep. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to leesa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. That's leesa.com/iHeart. Exclusions apply. See leesa.com for more details.
When's the first time you consciously remember trying to make something happier looking?
I think it was right around like 2009-ish. You know, I was going through like a weird period in my life and had a lot, like I was saying, like a lot of like just kind of deeper, darker thoughts. And
why did you have those thoughts? What was going on?
Just like back then was like relationship things.
Yeah.
You know, was going through like a big major change in my life with mm-hmm. A long-term relationship that I was in. And I kind of saw, was leaning on my art as kind of like the more positive art outlet. Like, hey, if I really go hard on this, maybe this is going to be like the way out. And it was, you know. But again, it was like I felt at that time mentally I was like in a deep, dark space and started creating these happy things and started, you know, leaning more into like that happy, you know, positive world. And it was just like me looking at the art would make me feel a certain way and vice versa. And, you know, the way that people were reacting, and it kind of, you know, just helped push in a positive direction.
If you're always kind of living in this art space that you've created for yourself, which is also an outlet, which is also your career, and you have employees who work with you, and it's just, you know, bigger than it ever could have, you know, maybe even imagined it being.
Yeah.
Is it hard to juggle your personal life with how much you put into your art?
Yeah. Luckily, like I've gotten it to a point now where I treat it like a, you know, 9-to-5 job, which I have to do because I have a wife and two kids. And it's been helpful because, you know, my wife works and, you know, she's is, you know, on the 9-to-5 schedule usually. I mean, she works more than that. But yeah, as I've been able to kind of like look at that lifestyle, because I think when you're growing up as an entrepreneur and artist, your mind is like, I have to work nonstop. You know, there is no off days, you know,
yeah,
always
no days
working.
Off. Yeah. It's like, well, take some days
yeah.
off.
But that, like, that's not, it's so bad for your mental health. So like,
yeah,
the more I've gotten like on that, like, okay, like follow a holiday schedule that maybe, you know, her company does, or you know, yeah, get up at 9-to-5. Like every morning I wake up, you know, I take the kids to school, whether that's I walk them to school or I drive and drop them off, and every day I pick them up from school, and I work from, you know, 9-to-5 every day in the studio. And I feel like having that structure has allowed me to, like, when I get home at the end of the day, to be like, okay, I can focus, you know, a little bit more than I used to. Not saying I can, because I do have a hard time. Like,
of course, it's always a juggle, right?
You know, you get home and it's easier to hop on your iPhone and, you know, but it used to be really bad where it would be like, I'd be at the studio till 2-3 in the morning every single night, and then up at, you know, 9 o'clock back at the studio. So it's gotten a little healthier along the way, just kind of like having like somewhat of a structure and a format. Like I think about it all the time. I'm terrified, like, if my wife was not in the picture and my kids, like, I couldn't imagine, like, just having like that free spirit of just being like, I'm gonna hop on a plane, go to New York for 5 days, or, you know, if I didn't have the company, like, you know, with employees and things like that. Because there's a lot of artists that do that and get caught in that cycle where it's like, all right, I'm going to LA for 3 weeks, and then I'm hopping on a plane and we'll go to New York and party with some friends up there. And it's like, you know, it's nice being able to kind of like pop in and out for special events, but like having that structure and that family base and that core back home, I think, really kind of keeps you level-headed and, you know, a sense of structure and place
in
life.
Is there ever a point where you feel in a moment stagnant with the structure, where you have to go say, ah, like, let me go do something random just to kind of like get it going? Or
yeah, I mean, luckily, like, I travel enough with like a lot of these projects, because these mural projects happen in like various cities, and, you know, that's like, you know, usually 7 days minimum to like complete a project like offsite. So those are nice breaks where I can kind of like get away, you know, and just kind of like get fully immersed into the art, you know. And then usually by the third or fourth day, I miss my family terribly. And I'm like, all right, I want to get back. First day, I'm like, get me out of here. You know,
you're like, God, finally. Then you're like, yeah, I miss you. I'm sad.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. I mean, my wife, you know, she travels for work too. And she's mm-hmm. just gone. It's the same thing.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
first
yeah.
day, she's like, all right, see you later. Have fun. Peace.
Yeah.
And then like by the third day, she's like, I'm so tired. I just want to be home.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, nah, it's good. I mean, I'm big on family. I always have, you know. I think it's important. You know, it just keeps you mentally sane as well.
Do you feel like you're the kind of person who learns the hard way? Like, has to learn it for yourself? Or Were you able to take advice from anybody and apply it, or did you? Because I feel like I'm the kind of person where, when I was younger, especially, I was more stubborn and had to figure it out myself, and then lose and fail to know that I shouldn't do that.
I'm a Taurus, man. So if that tells you anything, I'm as stubborn.
So what's
as
that
a bull.
Mean for you then?
I'm as stubborn as a bull. Yeah, I mean, same thing. Everything's been learning the hard way. I think, you know, artist personalities, I think a lot is like, you know, well, especially with me, is like, I got to go through it to remember it for it really to kind of like, you know,
yeah.
Give me
the pain.
Feel
the sting a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So make sure you don't forget it.
Yeah. You know, I'll read things and I'll be like, oh yeah, that's cool. And then like, yeah, goes out the window. Right. But I think everything I've learned has just been like, yeah, trial and error, underdog mentality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, see what worked, see what didn't work, tweak it, you know, and just kind of like fine tune it as you go along. You're gonna fall off the tracks here and there. Make sure you stay on that yellow line, you know, right down the middle, hopefully.
So what kind of advice would you give to somebody who is maybe following in your footsteps, who is just as stubborn as you are? I mean, you could sit here and say, hey, I would do this and, you know, remember this, but think about yourself back in the day. Would you have even taken that, you know, in like that? It's like, how would you give advice to somebody who...
I hate to be cliche, but like, you know, Nike, like, just do it. You got to just get the fuck out there and like make it happen.
But what does that mean, though? People say that kind of stuff.
No, I mean, it's the truth.
Give me an example of what just doing it is.
I mean, even if I don't have the knowledge, I feel like if you... Here's an example. I've always been a firm believer that like, if you say you're going to do something and you put it out into public, you're going to have to do it, because humans have big egos. And the minute you say, hey, if you were like, I'm going to do this crazy art show and this and that and blah, 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 and you put it on social media, are you going to let yourself not make that happen if you went public with it at mm-hmm. the stage in your career you're at right now?
So you're setting yourself up for accountability here.
Yeah. I mean, I've done it multiple times over my career where it's like, you know, some people are like, hey, don't talk about things until they're actual happen. But I've realized like, if I say something, you know, if I have a thought in my head and I know that I can make it happen, whether that I don't, even if I don't know how I'm gonna do something, I will start talking about it, because I know the minute I talk about it and I tell you about it and you're like, man, that's cool. Then I'm like, holy shit, I actually have to make this happen. And it's happened time and time again where it's like, you know, like the minute you start talking about things, that's when they become a reality. And it's like, you know, it's easy to sit there and be like, I'm going to wait till the timing's right, or I'm going to wait to get this investment, or I'm going to wait to do this. It's like, if you talk with that idea that like, this is happening and in your head it's already happened, you're going to find a way to make it happen. Like, you know, if you want to purchase a piece of property and you have no idea how to do that, right? But you're going to learn from each person you talk to. You're going to start talking to lawyers. You're going to start talking to real estate agents. You're going to start looking at properties. You're going to go to a property. Even if you don't have the money, you don't have the funding, you're going to go out there and you're going to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And then what's going to happen next? They're going to be like, what bank are you talking to for your funding?
Well, I don't have
like,
a bank.
Yeah. And what's that going to make you do? Oh, well, my buddy has a bank. You should talk to him.
Right.
Right. But it's like, if you sit there scared for years and you're terrified of just like taking that first step or that jump, like, I don't think like it's ever going to happen. Right. Like,
no one's going to come connect all the dots for you either.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You have to kind of do that yourself. Yeah.
And the minute you start talking to people, like, people want to help people naturally. I feel like that's the thing. Like,
more than you think, maybe, if you're not giving it a shot.
Yeah. I mean, that's all the time. Like, people will ask me things like, hey, do you know a good accountant? I'm like, yeah, this is my accountant here. Cool. You know, like,
right.
Things like that. Or like, who's your lawyer? Like, you know, like, but it's like, if you don't start talking about those things, even if they haven't happened yet, you're not going to get those leads, right? If you're just sitting there, you know, with your mouth shut, like, you know, oh, I can't wait for somebody to come to me and say, hey, do you want to?
Or that never happens.
Yeah.
And it usually doesn't. I've found that it really hasn't for me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, do you consider yourself a perfectionist when it comes to your work?
For sure, with my artwork. I mean,
what does being a perfectionist mean to you?
I mean, it's like, I mean, when it comes to my art, it's mostly just like, obviously, like the cleanliness of the work and like the very, like, from a design aesthetic, like, you know, clean lines, bright colors, like, my motto is kind of like, you know, paint it like it's printed, where like you look at it and you can't tell if it was, you know, a piece of graphic design or, you know, that was printed on an Epson printer or or a screen printer or whatnot. So
that's really just your style, right?
Yeah, like, that's my style. But I guess that comes from just like my personality a little bit, which is weird because like you would think that like you'd walk in my house and it'd be like everything would be like in perfect place, but right. Maybe that's like where I find my, I don't know, place of like relaxation is like when I know my art is so like, you know, clean and structured, because the rest of my life I feel like it's like an ADD mentality where I'm like running around sometimes like like a chicken with my head cut off, just like.
But this is a place where all those things come together for something that's really put together.
Yeah.
Do you feel like any of the work you've ever made is perfect?
I think you can ask any artist and they always feel like every piece could be pushed harder, it could be better, it could be cleaner.
Yeah.
You know, they're always struggling with that, like, is this done? Like, I don't, like, you know, luckily I don't do like a ton of abstract work, but like that's one thing like that's always baffled my mind and like been a place of interest is like these abstract painters that are just like brush strokes and splattering canvas and doing sprays. It's like, how do you know when that's done?
Right.
It's a feeling. Or like, do you ever have times when you push it too far and you're like, man,
I overdid it a little bit, right?
Yeah, I mean, with my stuff, it's always started as like, you know, there's a sketch, there's a digital drawing. You know, I pretty much know when I'm painting a giant wall or a canvas what it's going to look like, just because that's how, like, my process. But like, there's a lot of artists that just go to a wall and start throwing paint and, you know, seeing, reacting to those marks and, you know, seeing what comes out of that entire process.
Yeah, I decided years ago that I am not a perfectionist. Only really because, not that I don't want my work to be perfect, but also that I realize every time I release a new podcast, you know, I'll listen to it one time and then I'll not want to listen to it again because I'll immediately think about all the things I would have done differently. And, you know, I just apply that to my next thing. But I've met so many people over the years who say I'm a perfectionist, right?
Yeah.
A lot of those people, not all of them, but a lot of them, majority of them, never put out anything. They're always trying to make it perfect, and so therefore they don't ever put anything out into the world. And, and me personally, I've learned that putting out stuff that maybe had a couple flaws in it that I didn't even realize were flaws until I got better later and just got better at my craft. But sitting back there and saying I wanted to be perfect and it holding me back from putting anything out at all, I wouldn't be where I am at today.
Yeah, no, I see that a lot in the art world. And the music world too. Uh-huh. It's just like I've seen like these producers where, you know, they're like, you know, super talented and it's the same thing. Yeah. It's like they're just sitting on files and they're like, I'm gonna release these one day, and then you're like, okay, it's been 10 years you've been saying that, like, yeah, like these are fire, like drop them.
Yeah, you know, for real. Like,
you know, but and yeah, artists too, like you'll walk in an artist studio and they'll have hundreds of paintings, you're like, why don't you show these anyway, and they're just like, eh.
Right.
But that's funny that you say that about kind of like moving on from a body of work when it's like after you complete it, because I feel a very similar way when it's like when it's done, it's done.
Yeah.
I mean, there's like some cases where I'll go back like 5 years later.
Yeah.
And it is cool to kind of revisit those things or watch those videos and be like, okay, there's been some growth, you know.
Yeah, it's a good reality check, assessment of where we were, where we got, you know.
It's always cool to kind of see that, you know, that timeline, because back then it's funny because like you always think you're at your, like, you know, best point right at a certain year, and then you go back and you're like, wow, I improved a lot, right?
Yeah.
But I guess that's how it goes.
Yeah,
man, if you're not changing and growing and getting better, or at least thinking you're getting better.
I mean I'm equally as stubborn, I think, when it comes to that kind of stuff. So I think the most valuable lessons I've learned that have improved my work have been putting it out and dealing with what that feels like.
Yeah.
And, you know, it never felt perfect to me. I did my best at the time. But sometimes you even have constraints that are out of your control.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, I mean, I had to get this done by this time. It's like, yeah, you could always do it differently, but you learn from that when you put it out, I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of deadlines, what do you think about deadlines in the creative space and, like, you know,
right?
Like you said, like, do deadlines sometimes dictate like the quality of work? And sometimes I don't get shit done if I don't have a deadline. Someone's like, hey,
I hate to admit it, but I kind of need that kick in the ass sometimes where, you know, it's like I was always the kid even in school where, oh, the project's due tomorrow, let's start now.
Yeah, exactly.
and then also get an A maybe, right? Yeah. And just bust it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I do need that sort of kick in the ass deadline where, hey man, don't ruin your reputation on this shit. get it done.
Yeah.
And you kind of learn how to juggle that a little bit as you grow into your craft more, I think, where it's not, you don't put yourself in, you know, too risky of a situation, but at the same time, you make accountability, or I set like accountability measures for myself in order to finish the product.
Yeah.
Right? Like that business mind on top of the creative mind, because creatively I could go on forever with all the different ideas and ways to do this, because it's infinite sometimes.
Yeah.
But if I force that structure onto this, it makes me think about the things that matter first. And, you know, when those become autonomous, I can work within that space and still make something great, even if it feels restrictive.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between award-winning mattress brand Leesa and home design favorite West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is the culmination of these two companies' shared values: premium materials, meticulous craftsmanship, and sustainable practices. Made with natural latex, responsibly sourced natural wool, and environmentally safe foams, the Natural Hybrid elevates your sleep sanctuary. Indulges your senses and supports a greener tomorrow. Plus, when you purchase the Natural Hybrid, you're also helping fuel Leesa's work with shelters and those in need. Since 2015, Leesa has donated more than 40,000 mattresses to ensure children and families have a safe place to sleep. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Leesa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit leesa.com/iHeart. That's leesa.com/iHeart.
What are you looking forward to the most, you think? I mean, all the work you've done, you know, you're past 40 now. You have this really cool, exciting new creative hub you're making. What's the future of Greg Mike's work?
I mean, obviously that, but it's, yeah, these like bigger projects, like whether it is building a hub, is it building like Loudland, which is like, you know, my version of Disneyland, you know, like those are the type of things I'm thinking about. Like,
what's Loudland? What's the vision here?
Some of the ideas are, you know, like build a small community where all the houses look like characters, build a giant skyscraper that looks like a character. I haven't seen that done. You know, like what if in the middle of New York City skyline, there was a giant, you know, giant building that looked like one of my characters?
Maybe awesome.
I mean, it'd be crazy. So it's like, those are the type of things where it's like, those are the dream projects that I'm looking for now. You know, I had the Loud House, you remember, here. I mean, right down the street here. You know, what if there was a whole community of those?
For those who don't know what that is, what's the Loud House?
The Loud House was a house that I painted right here next to Pond City Market on North Ave, which was random. It was like, it was one of those days where I got like a random, you know, DM from a developer. And he's like, hey, I have this house that's zoned in a commercial district. So there's no HOA. We can paint it whatever colors we want. Do you want to do it? And I was like, you know, he didn't have a budget for it. And it was just like one of those things. I'm like, you know, I've always had a dream of painting a house, painting a commercial jet, a commercial airline, a commercial ship, you know, whether that's like a cargo ship or like a cruise ship. So house was definitely one of those things on the list where it's like, you know, this is going to take time, not getting paid for it, but I think it's going to be really cool and I'm inspired by it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it took like a week, but I painted, you know, 360 this entire house, and you know, made the front doorstep turn into a giant loudmouth that you could kind of sit in. It became this whole like photo op.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like 3 days later, it's all over the news.
What are they saying?
They're just like, house painted in old Fourth Ward. Is this a sight for sore eyes or a piece of artwork?
Right, because we don't know.
And it was funny because, like, you know, that was like the title. It was like sight for sore eyes or art. And like,
is that funny to you, or how'd you feel about it?
No, I was like, I mean,
were you like, shut
this
up?
Was like 10 years ago. And I was definitely like, I feel like now my personality is kind of like, the more shit that you go through, like yeah. You can kind of like take shit and it bounces off of you left and right. Whereas like back then, like anything that would happen to me, I would like get fired up. I was like, I'm going down there right now. I'm gonna talk to the news people.
Protest.
Which I did, because they like hit me up. They're like, hey, do you want to like come down here? We're outside filming this. Like, we're doing a piece on the building. Like, would you come talk to us? My team's like, don't go down there. Ignore the email.
You're like, who said it was an eyesore? Yeah. Raise your hand.
No, and there's a video clip on my social media where like it's funny because like you could tell I was just like younger and just more of a knucklehead, and I don't know, I guess Larry Loudmouth was coming out, but like, yeah, I'm like this is better than some condo you're gonna, you know, build here, like, you know, I was like, yeah, you're gonna knock this down and build a high rise.
It stands for more than that.
Yeah, you know. And I mean at the time I was just kind of like a little pissed about it, because, you know, they, I mean, I guess that's what the news does, right? They like, they paint it in a positive and negative like vantage point. Like, they interviewed someone that was like, you know, really upset about it, and then they interviewed somebody that was like, I love art, I love Greg's work, like, this, yeah, is the greatest thing ever, like, we need more houses like this. So you know, it was cool. But yeah, I mean, what ended up happening with that was they, because it was vacant when I painted it, like, it was like, it was an office building. I think there was like an accountant.
Was it legal?
Yeah, because there was no, like, I guess by city code, you can paint your commercial building however you want as long as it's on private
property.
That
way, so it was by the book.
Yeah, but literally the house next door was like a residential house. And
right.
Like, you know,
how they feel about it?
I mean, there's people on, like, you know, all these, you know, Reddits and Zillows and all these things commenting like, oh, this is bringing down the value of the neighborhood. Which,
it's like,
you know,
are you sure about
I understand.
That? Is it, though?
A little bit.
Is it, though?
But it's also like, you go 10 feet one direction, it's a residential house. You go 10 feet the other direction, it's a massive, you know, they're building, you know, retail spaces and condos and, you know, all these things that, you know, a lot of times they don't have control over.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was like, at the end of the day, it's art. Don't look at it if you don't like it. It's not offending anything.
Close
if anything,
your eyes.
If anything, it's paint, and paint protects brick. So it's, you know, it's really helping the building.
It's a good argument. I like that.
Yeah, we used to always say that about graffiti. When people complained about graffiti, we're like, actually, we're actually protecting. We're putting a protective coating on your building. You know, so I'm actually helping the longevity and historical nature of your building.
Yeah, I mean, 10 years ago, they were, I feel like today, people care a little less about graffiti.
Yeah.
You know, they're kind of like, oh wow, how cool.
Yeah,
but there was a time where, you know, every Karen was probably like, this is the devil here.
Yeah, for sure.
And you probably grew up with that. Did you ever have any weird run-ins when you were doing graffiti with, I don't know, the cops or some HOA guy, or I don't,
yeah,
know.
Yeah, of course. I mean, dude, even up to what, I mean, I don't know how many years ago it was now, 7 or 10 years ago. I mean, I got slapped with like a $1 million lawsuit on,
really,
like, you know, where they,
what happened,
where they said that I did some work
where they said you did done. But you weren't there.
I was not there at the time.
You really weren't there.
Like, growing up as a kid, it was, you know, like, it was a lot of that. You're constantly like running from the police, hiding, ducking, you know. But that was like what made graffiti fun, was that adrenaline rush. It's like skydiving, you know. I feel like people get addicted to that natural high and chasing that, you know, that feeling.
It's, yeah,
like, you don't have to do drugs, but you can go out and, you know, paint a massive piece on the side of the road and catch flicks of it the next day, and, you know, hide in the bushes for 30 minutes at a time because you saw some headlights from a car like driving down a you know, deserted road. Like, that, like, feeling of like your chest pumping and like adrenaline was like, that's what is the reason people do graffiti. Like, if you've never done that, you don't understand what that is. Yeah, you're gonna look at graffiti and be like, I don't get it. I mean, obviously there's a lot of things that go into it. It's fame, notoriety. But I think for a lot of people, it's the addiction to, it's the same reason, like, why do people go skydiving?
Mm-hmm. Like, clearly they like think the about thrill.
It, yeah, it's that thrill. It's crazy. I see a lot of these people now, too, like, that get to a certain level in their career, and they've made, you know, X amount of money, and you're starting to see, like, these, like, big CEOs of these corporations that, like, they are only, like, doing things like that to kind of get that natural high. Because, like, if they're buying another Lambo, like, that doesn't give them the thrill, right? It's, mm-hmm, like, so it's been interesting. I've seen some people that have been really successful, just like friends along the way, that I'm like, I'd never thought you'd be skydiving, bro. Like, what bro, what are you, okay,
are we good,
is everything good?
Yeah,
but like, I think about it, I'm like, if you have everything you can want and dream in your life, like, what gives those type,
wants
of
a little excitement in his life,
thrill,
it sounds like,
right?
I mean, I see some crazy graffiti sometimes where I'm like, how the hell they actually pull this off, right? Have you done some of those before?
I painted a few billboards like back, but that was like, I was like probably 16, 17 years old in South Florida. But and that shit was scary as shit. And you know, you gotta like cover up the lights with a t-shirt or a rag or something so that you can't see, you know, when you're climbing up on.
Paint a picture for me, like what's the crazy one you did, and like just location wise.
I mean, mostly in West Palm Beach when I was doing like more bombing. That's like what you call like graffiti, where it's, you know, you're just going out to paint as much as possible, and you're doing
in one night.
You're doing, I mean, yeah,
just,
I mean,
tagging just stuff,
yeah,
up.
I mean, if you're, there's like in graffiti, there's like tagging, which is like a tag, and usually that's just like a one liner of your name.
Mm-hmm.
There's bombing, which is like more just like go out and kill as much stuff as you can, and that's like, you know, you're less focused on, you know, how pretty it looks, and you're more just like doing fill-ins, which is like you're just doing like, you know, hollow fills and outlines, and that's just like how many like bubble letter throw-ups is what they're called, like can you place around a city or an area at the time, you know. So like you have your tag, which is your most basic thing, you have your fill-ins and your bubble letters and your bombing, which is more just like your quick stuff that you probably see a lot of.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have your piecing, which is like short for like a masterpiece. That's where it came from. And that's where you see like the more like fill in, fine tuned colors, you know, like, and it's like, if you can get to that level where you're doing like pieces as like other folks are just like going out and bombing, like you're going out and you're spending, you know, 8-9 hours like painting on the back of a highway freeway sign, which is called like a heaven spot. Like, because basically like you feel like you're in heaven up there, because like there's nothing else around. You're looking around, there's just cars zooming under you, which is absolutely insane.
That's insane.
You know, especially kids that are like going up there, like, you know, after a few brews at the end of the night.
Right. What could go wrong?
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, if you can, you know, master and crush masterpieces. But like, I guess like when you, the term going like being a king in graffiti is like being all city, which is like you're the best at your craft. You know, like there's, you know, there's only a few folks get to the like king level. But yeah, you're able to like, you're able to piece, you're able to bomb, you're able to tag, mm-hmm. you know, you have all the things mastered.
Have you ever had to run from the cops?
Of course.
Give me an example.
I still run from the cops. I ran from the cops this morning. No.
Did you?
Just kidding. Like, I ran from the cops in my head.
There was an officer downstairs. You might, Mike, you want to go grab him?
Yeah. No, it was funny this morning. It was random. I dropped my kid off at school. There's like a little park by the school, and I mean, I'm not dressed for it, but I decided to just run full speed through the woods. And I
from
like had
cops?
It on my Instagram. No, oh, but everyone's like everyone's like DMing me. They're like, bro, are you running from the cops? Like what is going on right now? And I was like, maybe I'm just running from the bear in my head that's telling me,
yeah,
just let it out and go fucking go full speed. That's but amazing. Maybe that's, yeah, who knows? Maybe that's tied back to I see a trail in my head and think I need to run full speed down it.
How do you feel about AI and art?
It's such a mixed bag, dude. Like, I mean,
what's your knee-jerk reaction?
I mean, initially I was obviously pissed off, and I'm like, I can't believe this is, you know, this could ruin everything. But I think like anything, it's like you got to use it as a tool, right? Use it to your advantage. I mean, don't copy it, but use it as a mood board, use it as a thought starter. I mean, we've seen like even in our, you know, at ABV, like if we're curating something, you know, with the brand and we hit a roadblock and we're like, we know this needs to look psychedelic and old newspapers, you know, have vintage newspapers and things like that. Like what happens when we put that into Midjourney, and what does a computer think that looks like?
Mm-hmm.
And we've done that, and it's cool because it's like we then take that stuff and then we flip it and maybe we incorporate one little element into it in our bigger project. I mean, that's more like on like the agency side of things and the design business. Like I haven't really messed around with it a lot with my art, but I know a lot of artists that are like an artist, you know, a good friend of mine, you know, he's will be like, I want to see a bear that's made out of leaves, that's, you know, has smoke coming out of its ears and is in the middle of a desert, right? And then he'll take that and do that 6 different times and come up with these images and then collage all those images together and create a new piece of work. It's not any different than like an artist that goes on Google pre-AI that says, I need a picture of a candle, I need a picture of a lighter, I need a picture of a hand held in this direction.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go in Photoshop and assemble all those things and then they paint that, because that's what artists are doing. Like whether an artist is going and saying, I'm going to take a picture of this plant and I'm going to paint this plant, like it's very rare unless you're like a truly like surrealistic artist that you're painting just like straight out of your head. Like,
and that's what you're doing intentionally, yeah. If you're doing that, right? And that's your style of work.
AI is just doing that for you faster, right?
What's your fear with AI and art?
I mean, just like stylistically, like I've been thinking more like as an artist with AI being in the picture, like you have to be more of a brand. You have to be more of, you have to be able to manufacture more products, because that's one thing AI at this point hasn't been able to do is manufacture. I mean, it could design all day, but it's like if you have an image, you can't say, okay, AI, all right, now produce an event based around this image that has, you know, 3D elements, that's, you know, something that people can experience, whether that's like a music festival, right? Like you could say, design me a music festival in the desert and it looks like this, but like you can't say, okay, it doesn't have the power to go and produce that and book all the artists and run all the talent and, you know, the stuff on the ground, boots on the ground, hire all the folks. And so like I think that's where people are going to continue to win. It's like, you know, if you can design sculptures all day long through Midjourney, but it's like, how do you actually produce that? How do you put an event together where people are going to go look at that? You know, how do you make it more than just mm-hmm. a painting, right?
Right.
How is it something that can be experienced by people? Those are the things where I think it's going to like set people apart. You know, you're going to see like a lot of people that are painting the same things, which are just like AI generated images, but like mm-hmm. the people that are creating experiences for people, I think, are the people that are going to be able to stand out.
Do you feel like the advancements of AI art and the accessibility of the programs could potentially devalue human made art like yours?
The thing that like kind of makes me feel okay with it is how long art's been able to stay around like to this day, right? Think about like, you know, back in the early times, like I'm sure when the camera came out, people were like, art's gonna die. Why can't I just take a picture of that landscape, right?
Well, you could say the same thing maybe about an iPhone, right?
Yeah.
Everyone's a good photographer now.
Yeah. But it's like, I think humans want something that's created by human touch.
Do you see there being a time where maybe, you know, as AI art just keeps advancing and becomes more prevalent, that people will value human-made art more?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's why people value paintings like they do now. Like you could easily buy a replica photograph or digital print or print on canvas, but like,
right.
Yeah. I think that's just like humans being humans, and humans, the same reason, like the human touch and the human, like the act of creation and all that. It's like, I feel like people will always want that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what do you think about like for like acting and actors and like,
yeah,
I mean, I guess there's a market for, I mean, I see my kids that are addicted to watching all like Pixar films and, you know, Coco Melon and thing, like these YouTube shorts that are just like,
yeah,
you know, it's, that's all, there's not one, I mean, maybe there's voice actors involved in that, but I'm sure in the future you're going to be able to say, hey, write me a cartoon that's based on Larry Loudmouth and here's the script because I threw that in ChatGPT and
mm-hmm.
you know, here's a 30 minute, you know, short, you know, plot and do the animation for it same way you put it in Midjourney. It's going to kick out me a full animated series, right? Yeah. But it's like, yeah, are people going to still yearn for like voices like, you know, Chris Rock, like, you know,
yeah,
I think, as a cartoon character voice?
It's tough because I mean, I feel like I would yearn for that.
Yeah.
I do think that there are some people who just simply don't care.
Don't care.
Right? If it's like the same thing, like, I mean, if it sounds the same, looks the same, feels the same, it not being the same doesn't really matter. It's like living in the Matrix. It's like, yeah. Oh, if it feels real, it yeah. is real.
That's like, I mean, if you've seen those, like, you know, those like Drake AI audio, like
they're insane.
Like where they're making tracks that are like, you're like,
and they're fire too. You're like, yeah. They're like kind of slaps. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I don't know. Yeah. It's scary. I mean, times are crazy, but I guess we always figure out a way to make it work. Right. And, mm-hmm. and make, you know, hopefully humans will continue to evolve and be able to, how, you know, keep a living for themselves,
yeah,
you know, make money and succeed and be happy.
I mean, do you feel like at this point there's just so many content creators? I mean, I feel like everyone is a content creator now.
Yeah.
And so while these tools are super helpful and can, you know, get you eyes on your work or ears on your work that you would never be able to get in like a, you know, smaller setting at some gallery or live event, is it too saturated at this point? Is everyone trying to do that to the point where maybe this person over here who has objectively better work is being overshadowed by just how saturated it all is? Or
Yeah, and it's only going to get worse with this AI stuff.
Right.
You know what I mean, it's like AI, projectors, all these like tools that have like,
yeah,
you know, come to the forefront like the last few years. It's like anyone really can be an artist if you go on Midjourney, you type in an image, you project that image on a canvas, and you do a paint by numbers. You know, it's like, boom. But it's like, how do you stand out from that, right? So
yeah,
I think it's going to be like, yeah, the bar's going to be raised. And it's like, yeah, it's like, who's thinking of the crazier ideas? Who's doing insane installations? You know, like, just being an artist that paints on a canvas isn't going to cut it anymore, I don't think.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah.
But
we do some AI stuff.
Maybe this podcast is, or this, you know, interview, whatever you want to call it, is
yeah,
real.
We paid a lot of money for this deep fake here.
Yeah. Hey, how do you...
Greg Mike's busy. He couldn't come down
to
the office.
Does it look real? Do you guys believe it?
It looks... I mean, it feels real.
This is actually a deep fake.
What's the, like, the beta test for if you're AI?
You got to show blood.
Right now.
We do the,
prove it.
Yeah, the prick test. Yeah, give me your finger. Do you guys have the little test kit?
Yeah, it's like a COVID test, but it's like
you just put it into this. You put it into the computer, and it's like, yep, that's actually him.
I'm
okay.
Like, beep, and I'm like, yeah. Please come back. And I'm like, I'm worried. Am I gonna come back as AI? Do you care about your legacy?
Of course. I mean, that's a big thing I always think about, especially after I have kid. After now that I've had kids,
what do you care about?
I mean, for me, it's like, I'm always, you know, I think what kind of differs me a little bit with like a lot of artists is like, I've found like a strong passion for, you know, what we've done with ABV as an artist agency and gallery, where it's like utilizing my platform to, you know, put other artists, artwork on show. You know, we've worked with close to 500 artists globally, and we're constantly pushing out shows in our gallery for that reason, to kind of like, you know, make it bigger than just my art, you know, like utilize, you know, as I grow, to kind of use that as a showcase for other folks and, you know, artists that I meet. And I think hopefully that carries on. Like, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, do you want your kids to do art? Like, yeah, of course you want your kids to do art. But right. For me, I mean, I hope it's bigger than just me. I don't want it to just be Greg
Mike and
his family.
More than anything,
but like,
really.
Yeah, I want it to be like,
so when you're dead, you're dead.
How do you
right?
influence? How do you influence a community, a culture, an art scene in a city?
Yeah.
You know, those are the things that I'm thinking about. And hopefully, like, with building this new creative hub that, you know, inspires people to be artists. Like, I've noticed and had conversations with people that used to be like working dead end jobs as bartenders and came to me and they were like, Greg, what do I do? And I'm like, jump. Like, they were amazing artists. And now they're getting paid, you know, $60,000-$70,000 to paint one wall overseas, you know? And it's like, and they're doing those every month. And it's like, those are the same people that were scared to take the risk, that were bartending. And, you know, that's the type of stuff that makes me feel good. Mm-hmm. And it's like, hopefully, like, if our agency and our gallery and all these things that we're building can continue to do that, like, after I'm gone, whether it's through foundations or running the company still through other employees or partners or whatever,
right.
It's like, and you're able to positively impact other artists so that they can, like, live their lives freely, then that's a win.
Think about how much more popular your work would become if you died.
Don't say that.
I know.
Come on, man. And then I just realized that this guy's on, like, that's like true crime shit. I'm sure you've got some interesting listeners, and just stay away from
me. You're scared of my listeners. Anyone who's too into that. The thing is, I think your wife's one of them, though.
Yeah, so she is.
Like, she's
true.
Normal as hell.
True.
So, yeah.
Until she said she couldn't sleep at night. She's like,
don't
yeah,
listen to it when you go to sleep.
Yeah, no. You know? I'm like, why are you guys listening to these like things that are terrifying you? Where like, right. You're like, I'm gonna go and you're out of town and I'm gonna listen to something really scary and just be not able to sleep for 4 days. So I think she's into romance novels now. So that's
okay.
Helped,
yeah,
that's helped out a lot.
That's yeah. Until you read it and you're like, what is this?
Yeah, exactly. I'll hop on ChatGPT sometimes and just throw in the titles and be like, can you give me the 3-sentence summary on this book just to make sure she's not getting anything that is going to harm the relationship.
Oh God, that's good. Oh, and it's always a little bit worse.
You think
than
I'm
you
joking, but
yeah, but it's always like, wow, he does what? It was how big? What the?
Yeah, hell? Yeah, exactly.
That is amazing.
You gotta be careful when the plumber comes around.
Right. Well, this has been a blast, man. Yeah. I'm looking forward to when you get your new creative hub up and running. Would love to check it out at some point.
Of course. I'd love to give you a sneak peek and
yeah, man.
A little early view on it all. But yeah, what a fun conversation. I mean, I think we jumped around. I think the topic we were most interested in is AI and how our jobs are probably going to get up.
And how threatened we feel by it.
Stay away
from
us.
Did you get that, guys? Yeah. There should be a verification process. We need the government to step in at some point.
Not the government, but something similar to the government. Not the government, but
like an entity of sorts. Yeah, no, it's been fun, man, and I've always been a fan of yours. And,
likewise.
Long
history. Maybe one day we'll get back in the booth and lay some bars down or something.
Hey, man, hit me up anytime. Let's go.
All right.
Hey, man. Cheers, brother.
Talking to Death is a production of Tenderfoot TV and iHeart Podcast, created and hosted by Payne Lindsay. For Tenderfoot TV, executive producers are Payne Lindsay and Donald Albright. Co-executive producer is Mike Rooney. For iHeart Podcasts, executive producers are Matt Frederick and Alex Williams, with original music by Makeup and Vanity Set. Additional production by Mike Rooney, Dylan Harrington, Sean Nerney, Dayton Cole, and Gustav Wild for Cohedo. Production support by Tracy Kaplan, Mara Davis, and Trevor Young. Mixing and mastering by Cooper Skinner and Dayton Cole. Our cover art was created by Rob Sheridan. Check out our website, talkingtodeathpodcast.com.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Talking to Death. This series is released weekly, absolutely free. But if you want ad-free listening and exclusive bonuses, you can subscribe to Tenderfoot Plus on Apple Podcasts or go to tenderfootplus.com.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Tired of restless nights? At Leesa, we know good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. From memory foam mattresses to hybrids that keep you cool all night long, Leesa's mattresses offer exceptional comfort and support with free delivery and 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to leesa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. Exclusions apply. See leesa.com for more details.